Okay, it's Resonance 104.4, The Truth About Markets with Max and Stacy. For the next 60 minutes, we're going to be breaking it down for you, looking at the prices of stuff on the markets, because they tend to telegraph what the future is going to be, what the events are going to be, what the news is going to be a week from now, 2 weeks from now, because the insiders, of course, at the banks, they've got all the money, they put on the big bets, and then they do stuff that makes those bets, make those bets profitable. This is the world that we live in. It's not run by politics anymore, and it's not any kind of organic spontaneity anymore. It's bankers putting on huge bets, and then they create problems or they create events that make those bets profitable. So the classic example is 9/11. Monday is the anniversary of 9/11. The bankers put on bets. They were making negative bets against airline companies. And then in full knowledge that there was this risk. We know that even the 9/11 report that was issued, that the CIA was aware of the risk. We know that one of the insiders inside the CIA, Buzzy Krongard, working with George Tenet, who was a banker from Alex Brown, put on trades. There were a lot of trades through Alex Brown. People knew this was happening. And that's the point, is that they don't do anything to stop it, as you would hope our government officials would do to stop these events from happening. Instead, they see these tragedies as huge profit opportunities. And that's the difference now between things, the way things were 20, 30, 40 years ago. The government at that time still clung to this notion that one of their jobs was to protect people. Now, clearly, one of their perks of being a politician is that you have insider information and you can make lots of money, and that's the perk. And of course, the neoliberal philosophy is that if a few people get rich, it's great for society. A rising tide lifts all boats. So they've got their own ideology in place that suggests that, well, we make tons of money and that's good for society. If it means you die, you there in the Twin Towers, or the people who died from the bus bombings of 7/7, or the people who died in Iraq, or the people who die in Palestine, or the people who are dying in Africa. If you die, that's collateral damage, because we're helping society by becoming incredibly wealthy. And unfortunately, the worst element of all is that this mentality has led to total breakdown in the global ecology, and which is causing now really quite horrible backlash in the ecology. But anyway, price precedes news. So if you can see what the insiders are doing now, where they're making their bets, you can pretty well predict where the next tragedy is going to be. And as we said last week, Stacy, looking at where the Economist magazine last week is looking, it appears as though the next kind of 9/11-esque situation, forget about the conspiracy theories of that are being discussed in London this weekend about the 9/11 from 5 years ago. Let's talk about the next 9/11, which it looks like is going to happen in the American Virgin Islands. As The Economist magazine points out last week, they're incredibly vulnerable. There's no money being spent to protect these seaplanes that take off every single day. Within 10 seconds of takeoff, they can hit a cruise ship. The cruise ships are run by two companies, two of which are publicly traded, Carnival Cruise Line, Royal Caribbean Cruise Lines. These are two publicly traded cruise lines. And the bankers and the insiders are making, right now, big negative bets against these cruise operators.
Of course, but at Karma Bank Research noted that price was preceding that news, because it was only last week that The Economist noted that the cruise liners in the Caribbean are vulnerable. But remember, on Karma Bank Research, we saw that the numbers of the percentage increase in the number of short sales on those two companies, Royal Caribbean and Carnival Cruises, was rising rapidly, faster than most other companies listed on the S&P.
Yeah, and this tells us that the same people who were making negative bets against the airline companies 5 years ago before the Twin Towers blew up are making the similar negative bets against cruise ships floating around in the American Virgin Islands.
Yeah.
And there, as we were saying, you know, there was a time when government officials would think it was part of their responsibility to protect people from tragedy. Now they're looking for ways to profit from tragedies in any way they possibly can. And all of this data network spying by the NSA and the ID cards in the UK, this is all basically data that's being funneled and channeled back to the bankers to give them greater access to ways to make money on these tragedies. It's not to help them stop the tragedies, it's to help them place bets in the markets ahead of the tragedies to profit from the tragedies. And in fact, we had a very interesting story last week there was a journalist in America who came up with a story where she's resurrecting this idea that was floated a few years ago from the Pentagon, was talking about reintroducing this terror futures market, which is to create a virtual market where people can bet on terror futures. And it was shot down at the time because obviously it was very obvious that it was just a manifestation of this mentality that you're betting on terrorist activities and you can profit from those activities. And those who are committing the actions can make a bet that they'll go blow something up and then cash in on that bet. And they didn't launch it per se, but that exists today. Obviously, people in the know are making these types of bets all the time. The idea of bringing back the terror futures market is remarkable because it just takes all the gloss off, takes everything in between us and the reality that those who are manipulating these markets are creating the violence and the explosions that make their trades quite profitable. And I guess it all revolves around one simple misconception out there in the marketplace. People think that if something blows up or if something is destroyed or a stock price crashes, that you don't make money with that, which is wrong. Mm. You know, the fact is you can make money on a stock going up or a stock going down. You can make a bet either way, just like a casino. You can bet on red, you can bet on black. And whether something blows up or something is springs back to life, these are both money-making opportunities. It's a lot easier to make money on something being blown up because it takes, you know, how many years has it been? 5 years, and they still haven't even started to rebuild Ground Zero. How long did it take for the Twin Towers to collapse? 10 seconds. So you can make money in 10 seconds, a lot more money in 10 seconds than you can make on trying to figure out who's going to profit from rebuilding the Twin Towers over 5, 10, 15 years. This is why destruction is a lot more profitable than rebuilding, than growth.
And it's actually more profitable for the insiders because it tends to be insiders or big money managers who do shorting rather than a normal person on their online broker account.
Well, that's because you need to hedge your short sale.
Yeah.
And people in the professional money market business can hedge their short sale because when you're short a stock, you lose money if the stock goes up. So the way to hedge that is to buy calls on the stock to hedge your upside risk in this case. And most retail investors don't really have the horsepower, the firepower, or the analytics to properly hedge a short sale. So it's something that the insiders who are allowing for these catastrophes to happen to have the ability to hedge their short sale. So they're not really taking any risks. And then they create the problems. Another perfect example of this is in the area of hurricane insurance and catastrophe bonds. So the bankers create catastrophe bonds and hurricane insurance, and then they charge up, they mark up the price of these products, and they're doing an active trade in these catastrophe bonds all over the world. At the same time, they're provoking the catastrophes. So they're provoking, 9/11, down there in Katrina. Why haven't they really rebuilt the defenses for Katrina? It's because of the incredible amount of money being made marking up the cost of flood insurance. Why bother doing something that would cut into your ability to make money selling flood insurance and catastrophe insurance and do the trade in catastrophe bonds when you can make a lot more money selling those bonds against people's fear? Why spend money actually protecting people when you can make more money killing people? And this is the economics that we're all faced with now, is that the people who run the banks know that it's, you can make a quick buck killing people. It's a lot easier. I mean, this is what one of the main impetuses for war has been over the years, is that on the profit side, it's remarkably easy to make money in the death business. The murder business is much more profitable than the love business. You know, fear is more profitable than love. And since the world's geography effectively is no longer in play, it's not a geographic war anymore. It's a war for market share. It's a war for currency domination. It's a war that entails who's got the most firepower and the most access to the biggest markets, financial markets. It's not geographically driven anymore. People are not, except in Israel, which is a bit archaic. They're fighting for a few square inches of so-called holy land, and they're willing to completely destroy their economy as a result, which is another form of psychosis. But, that's another story. So here we have the fifth year anniversary of the Twin Towers event, which is pure insider trading. And from what I gather, in London, there's a big conference
on this very topic, if I'm not mistaken, there's a big town hall meeting or something going on. What's happening?
There's a big meeting at Conway Hall, which is just here on the West End near Holborn, I guess. And apparently it sold out. A 9/11 for Truth movement. Professor David Ray Griffin is speaking tonight. He's a professor of theology and religion at Claremont University in America. And he wrote this book called The New Pearl Harbor, speaking of kamikazes and Amerikazes, as we have been doing for the last week or two on Karma Bank Radio. Mm. But the shocking thing about this, reading about this this event tonight in The Guardian, is that a recent poll in the U.S. found that 36% of Americans believed it very likely or somewhat likely that their government was involved in allowing the attacks or had carried them out themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I find that pretty remarkable.
How much? What percentage?
36%.
Mm-hmm. And that's growing, I guess.
Yeah, it's growing. Well, we read about it more and more.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we had suggested that from the very beginning.
Mm.
Because, I mean, even the Israeli counterterrorism agency came out with a report 2 weeks after 9/11, Black Tuesday, the biggest insider trading scam in history.
Mm-hmm.
So we knew the numbers. The numbers preceded this news. It's taken 5 years for Americans to say, hey, this just seems like too many people have profited hugely in America from this.
Yeah, well, of course. And whether it's directly planning that event or just not looking the other way when you have an opportunity to stop that event from happening,
mm-hmm.
you know, the results are the same. And the reality is the same. The Americans are being victimized by the bankers and their government officials working together to disenfranchise Americans. And this is what Americans are up against.
To people who say, oh, this is just conspiracy theory, I mean, all you have to do is, as you mentioned earlier, is Katrina. The government looked the other way. They had plenty of warning. Everybody knew what a hurricane would do. They had all sorts of reports of what a Category 3 hurricane would do to New Orleans. They were told, everybody in the world, we all knew here in the UK, that a hurricane was coming to New Orleans. It was going to be flooded.
Mm-hmm.
But 7 days after the hurricane hit, finally, the National Guard arrives.
Right. And, of course, the insurance companies, when those homeowners went to collect on the insurance companies said, no way, we're not paying you out of your insurance claims. So what it would be the incentive to stop that event from happening if you know that, A, you're not going to pay the insurance claims, and, B, you can raise rates for your insurance products going forward?
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, you're an insurance company and, you know, you own government, and the government, therefore, is not going to respond in a timely fashion because it's not in your economic best interest.
Well, I'd say that Katrina was very much as much of a terrorist event as Bin Laden's 9/11 because, you know, everybody noted even from that very first day that this was a genius terrorist propaganda event, the whole 9/11, because Bin Laden made sure that the cameras would all be there to capture the terror and put the fear of God into people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the same thing with Katrina. I mean, the press, the media were down there capturing for days on end before the government arrived the suffering of these people. And I think that was propaganda toward the American audience. Your government wanted you to know they are not going to be there for you, so you better get over it.
It's just not economically viable, democracy in America anymore.
No.
The way that the founding fathers originated it back in the 18th century. The bankers in America don't really think it's in their economic best interest to pursue democracy anymore. So they are relying on a form of financial fascism that excludes the participation of the vast majority for the benefit of a few insiders working at the big banks. And this has given rise to this global insurrection against this banking and corporate occupation. And a certain percentage of those people have become violent. Hence, the 9/11s, the 7/7s, the Columbine murders, the Timothy McVeighs, and all the other problems that we see popping up all over the world. People call it anti-globalization. It's basically anti-feudalization. And if you listen to what's happening in America right now, you hear George Bush speak, he's talking in a way that predates Descartes. You know, he's talking about, you know, just give us your faith because we're fighting terrorism. When you ask him exactly what that means, of course, he just says, trust us. We've got a direct line from God. And don't try to be understanding of what we're doing. Don't look at the facts. Don't look at the connections. Don't look at the cause and effect. Don't think. Don't be a thinking person. Just give us your faith. Give us your money. And it's become almost like the system back in the Middle Ages of papal indulgences. You know, in America now, in order to stay safe, to keep yourself out of harm's way, you've got to give your papal indulgence to the Pope, being the corrupt Pope, George Bush. And that's the only way you can stay out of harm's way. Otherwise, you're going to be marginalized and thrown to the lions. And on this week, last week or the week before, I said that the way Americans are going, the establishment in America is going to attack the press is that they're going to find some marginal reporter and they're going to totally harass this marginal reporter and do nasty bits to a marginal reporter as a frightening scare to the bigger reporters and the bigger journalists out there. And we just saw this happen. One of my, you see, I just follow the prices and I can make these predictions. And sure enough, the news just came out yesterday that Greg Palast, who's an investigative reporter in America, who wrote a book called The Armed Madhouse, which are stories from inside the White House, who was in New Orleans taping Exxon, apparently, and making some investigative journalistic reports that are the lifeblood of democracy in America. Well, now, apparently, he's got the Homeland Security shoved up his ass, and they're making his life miserable. And this is exactly what we said would happen. You take somebody who's a fringe reporter, a fringe journalist, who's not part of the mainstream media, and you begin to pick them off one by one on the fringe, with the message being to the mainstream media that this could happen to you. So make sure you don't go into any areas of the news that might paint a black picture for the corporations who are sponsoring this government in ways that are taking away your civil rights, are taking away democratic rights, are turning the American economy into a fascist gulag. And this is what we saw just come out yesterday.
Greg Palast came to prominence with his BBC documentary about the Florida stolen election. So he is known here as a BBC journalist.
Well, but he's only allowed really to work here.
Well, of course, because you don't have investigative journalism in America.
He's one of the few investigative journalists in America, American-born, who, unfortunately, he's not allowed to work in America. So, man, the British population could be aware of Greg Palast's work, but he's not allowed to work in America.
Yeah, no, you can't do investigative journalism visually because, you know, most Americans only watch television. They don't read the newspaper. So they do allow Seymour Hersh to exist without taking him out yet.
Right.
Who knows? We'll see what happens with Greg Palast. But he has been arrested by Homeland Security for filming an Exxon building.
Mm-hmm.
Because apparently this is a national security issue.
Well, you know, this is what we're talking about. This is exactly very, very predictable, is that they're sending a message to mainstream media. This guy was, he was a bit of a populist in that he wore a, kind of a funny hat, and he spoke in ways that were sarcastic, and it's kind of like John Stewart, you know, meets Edward R. Murrow. I mean, it's a mix of really quite serious journalism, but with a kind of a funky edge. And so it's very accessible to people who might glaze over when you start to talk about the minutia of creeping fascism. They might just kind of say, you know, where's my Velveeta cheese? And, you know, so this guy was really a populist. And for this, of course, quite dangerous because he made these issues accessible to people, and then people would start to get upset, of course, and that they don't like this.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, this always happens. The only other place this happens is Russia or the Middle East, when Al Jazeera journalists are always being arrested by dictatorships in the Middle East for exposing national security secrets or being in sensitive areas.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, talking about propaganda is Madge Weinstein, the bloated lesbian from Chicago. She's got a very interesting comment she wants to share with us, I gather. It concerns propaganda and cheese, two very important topics on this show. What is Madge talking about over there?
Let's play her.
Yeah.
Hello, yeah. Max. Mm. Hello, Stacey. Yeah. This is Madge Weinstein, lesbian, reporting from sunny Miami Beach, horrible Miami Beach, soon to be completely erased from the map due to global warming.
Oh, dear.
One of the advantages, of course, of global warming is that Miami, the SUV capital of the world, will ironically be swept off of it.
Yay.
Ground.
Yay.
Into the suburbs of Atlantis.
Yay.
That doesn't make sense. Anyway, I was going to say greetings from the land of bad cheese, mm-hmm. but that didn't work out. I'm really upset. I even got a brie last week. I got a brie.
In America?
It's pretty gold wrapping. It cost $5.95. I'm in the bathroom now. I think it might work better. $5.95, mm-hmm. and it was shit. It tasted like fucking soap, like
yeah,
the cheese.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I got to figure out what to do here. I just can't stand this place. The smell of my own ass even is bothering me. Usually I love it. So anyway, I was listening to this. I actually watched the... Well, I couldn't get through the whole thing, but I got through a lot of this video where President George W. Douche was admitting to having these secret prisons. And one of the reporters asked him, he said, Bush starts talking about, you know, the terrorism, and then 9/11, September the 11th, 2004, back and forth from one to the other. And the reporter bravely said, okay, but what does that have to do with September? Oh, and then he was talking about Iraq. And this reporter said, what does that have to do with September 11th? He said, nothing. And then he went on with his usual propaganda bullshit. My question for you, Mangs and Stacy, is this. Not that I have to have a question, but I watch a lot of that Obermeyer, you know, that Crooks and Liars and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And they always have a question at the end. This is really going nowhere, but I don't care. I'm a very fat woman, and I'm in Florida turd, which I hate. Now, the government easily admits that what they're doing is public relations when they create these bullshit stories about how we're going to tell people this lie so we can, you know, distract them. Public relations, the government does. The government has done for a long time and freely admits that it's public relations, you know, putting out special press releases to the government. Now, propaganda, on the other hand, is illegal. And it's illegal to propagandize in the United States. A lot of people, very few people know that. Very few people care when it's all about Tom Cruise getting fired from some stupid bullshit movie. Oops. Okay, but it is, in fact, illegal to propagandize inside the United States, which is why the Voice of America cannot be broadcast inside the United States, even though you can hear it on the shortwave. Now, if you look back into the history of public relations, it was originally called propaganda, and the word was changed into public relations because of the connotations with the Nazis, because they used the same technology or the same basic strategies of public relations, but it was called propaganda. Well, that became a very dirty word after the Nazis, so they changed the name of it. Bernays changed the name of it to public relations. So why is it, Max and Stacy, that public relations is legal, propaganda is illegal, even though they're both the exact same things, regarding the government anyway? Okay. I have to go get eaten out by an enormous lesbian with hairy, chafing thighs. Mm. This is Madge Weinstein saying goodbye from the land of the disgusting fat ass.
Oh, lovely. Eaten out by a... enormous lesbian with hairy thighs.
That sounds gross. But do you think Madge might be thrown into wherever Greg Palast might be for his investigative journalism? Madge might be thrown in there as well for her investigative journalism about the state of Brie and the American economy?
Well, you know, let's talk about cheese for a second.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's cheese in America... It's cheese like, but it's not cheese as you would understand that word to be known in Europe and especially in France. And, you know, Americans grow up with this sense that, well, it says cheese on the label, therefore it must be cheese. And then you go to Europe and you taste cheese that's actually cheese, and you realize you've been betrayed. You've been lied to. And this is an experience that people have when they come to Europe and they spend some time in Europe or they anywhere else in the world. They realize that so much of America is propaganda, is a sales pitch. It's not really organic in any sense. It's pure. It's very transitory. America itself is a transitory nation. It's a very young nation. It's not built to last. You know, we had that quote we read the past from one of the founding fathers that said, what did it say? America's a disaster waiting to happen, or he doesn't expect America to last. I think it was John Adams. He had a quote saying that he doubts America will last. I mean, it's like the Eiffel Tower. You know, the Eiffel Tower was built as a an attraction for the 1900 World's Fair. They didn't expect it to last. People liked it so much that it's still around. But America, I think, was built as a bit of a novelty. It's not built to last. It's now crumbling. And it's a party favor. It's like one of those party poppers. You pull the popper, it makes a big bang. People are like, wow! There's a little prize inside, which is Hollywood and the Hollywood industry. But it's not built to last. It's just it's built to be a temporary country with temporary values, with temporary people. And it's past its sell-by freshness date. And instead of going quietly into that good night with some dignity, it's trying to hold on to its power by going around the world now killing people to try to salvage its power. I mean, it's like some old hag in Hollywood getting plastic surgery all the time. You know, America's out there going around the world killing people to try to try to hang on to its youth. And it's a shame, really, because it's becoming like a Michael Jackson-like country. It's deformed. It's mutated. It's hard to look at. It's involved in pedophile scams all over the world. You got these Marines in Iraq, you know, shtipping little baby boys and girls for fun. They open the Abu Ghraib prison, and they're shtipping these poor Iraqi babies for fun. And, you know, it's like a Michael Jackson, again, pedophilia, plastic surgery, temporary values, a pop sensibility. It's just not meant to last. It's not that I'm anti-American. It's just that I'm over it already. It's like it was fun while it lasted, but there's a much bigger world out there with better cheese, you know, and a better appreciation for life. What's going on over there?
Well, because you said it was good while it lasted. Here's the quote from John Adams. Remember now, he was part of writing the Constitution of America. He said, quote, "Remember, democracy never lasts long. Mm-hmm. It soon wastes, exhausts, and murders itself.
Right.
There never was a democracy yet that did not commit suicide."
Well, I think that is coming true. Mm-hmm. You know, America is basically committing suicide by putting all of its, you know, George Bush is like walked into the casino of world politics with all of the American chips and put them on red on the roulette wheel. And now you see the little bouncing balls going bing, bing, bong, bong, bing, bong, 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 bing, bong, bong, bong. Black. Black. he bet the entire country on red. Came up black. He lost his entire country in the global casino.
Wow. Do you want to hear some of the examples of propaganda and then you decide?
I do want to hear that casino. But I don't know. Before you talk about propaganda there on the Wikipedia, I just had a flashback to last week's show. We were talking about this poet laureate that's up for some, I guess, a Nobel Prize in poetry.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote a poem about 9/11, which is shamefully opportunistic enough. But if that's not bad enough, he put a product placement in the poem. He said something about, like, the Twin Towers falling was a bump in the night, and he reached for his Pepsi Max.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that was in the third stanza of a short poem about 9/11, which is considered for the Nobel Prize. Now, you know what's remarkable also is that we were just looked again at some Bill Hicks video, which we downloaded from BitTorrent, and I highly recommend this Bill Hicks. It's the best Bill Hicks thing I've seen. I've seen a bunch of Bill Hicks stuff, and this is the best one I've seen, Sane Man. You can download it on BitTorrent. And he was saying that the very, very – he was talking about from Wham, Michael, what's his name?
George Michael.
George Michael as being not a real rock star, as being really, you know, not like Jimi Hendrix, who's got massive cock. He's saying George Michael's got a little, you know, push pin down there where he should have some kind of evidence of some serious manhood. And he was just saying how the rock and roll industry with acts in the pop realm becoming degraded by the appearances of waif chick, mall singing, nobodies. And he was saying that even the Nobel poetry, the prize for, he's talking about actually Nobel winning poetry, mm-hmm, as being total crap. And this was 15 years ago he was talking about this. And it was so prescient. And I think this is why people love Bill Hicks, is because he really reached into the guts of philosophy, the underlying philosophy of humanity, and was able to really, you know, play it like a violin. He really understood the motivations and the actions of of the people who have power. And anyway, he was talking about how horrible this Nobel-winning poetry. And then flash forward 15 years, and you've got this guy milking 9/11 with some poem where he actually puts in a product placement, Pepsi Max. And in the Bill Hicks, remember he's talking about George Michael is selling Pepsi.
Diet Coke.
Diet Coke.
Yeah.
So once again, it's, you know, the beverage industry. It's so much. It goes back to that beverage industry. Coca-Cola, of course, an American icon. It embodies so much of what is wrong with America, going back to the Nazi days when they were selling Fanta, which was an orange drink, which they sold to Nazis, and to the present day where they're draining groundwater in Kerala, India to, you know, totally poor Indians are getting slammed by the Coca-Cola company, selling all that sugary water around the world, problems in Colombia, massive demonstrations and protests against Coca-Cola around the world. But, of course, they have a sugar daddy in the form of Warren Buffett, who the biggest shareholder of Coca-Cola, who then goes into Israel and buys a $4 billion company, who then invades Lebanon and tries to kill poor Lebanese for sport, for Warren, for profits, for Berkshire Hathaway dividend. And, of course, they lose that war because they lost the Iraq war and they lost the Afghanistanian war as the loser now. You know, the Taliban is rising up. Opium production has never been higher. And the U.S. is absolutely fading. And I say, who cares? It's a pop cult country. It was never meant to last. The founding fathers themselves constantly point out to the fact there was another founding father, another quote that says he didn't think that America would last more than 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
It is only because they coughed up a few ingenious leaders like an Abe Lincoln here and there that lasted more than 50 years. Okay, it was over 200 years old, but I think it's well past its sell-by fresh date, and I just don't think we should really worry about it. It was like, why get all sentimental and maudlin about, you know, when the movie's over, it's over. You know, what is the only really cultural artifact that's indigenous to America is the Hollywood movie industry. You know, I mean, people point to jazz, but jazz is on the backs of the African culture. It's not really an American cultural artifact. It's been through the American pop culture ringer, but that effectively is dead. There's nothing really happening in jazz anymore. Jazz as an art form is dead. It was assimilated to death in America. You see pockets of it around the world, but as an art form in America, is dead. The only thing left is the Hollywood model, and the Hollywood model is now, because of BitTorrent, because of P2P file swapping, because of the rise of cheap networking and the aesthetic from other places other than America taking over, Hollywood is now on its deathbed also. Therefore, America's on its deathbed. But who cares? The movie is over. You know, if you're one of these people that likes to sit in the movie theater and watch the movie two or three times in a row, you know, we've already even been through that. We've seen America, you know, collapse and reinvent itself already. America was supposed to die in the 1970s when the U.S. dollar was going to be completely thrown overboard. But then they came up with this idea of tying the dollar to oil. And then you had a 35, 40-year resurgence of the American economy. And you had still the prevalence of the U.S. dollar as the world reserve currency. But now that's coming to a close. So we had America and America the sequel. That's it. It's like Godfather 1, Godfather 2. Godfather 3 sucked. Godfather 3 sucked. There's nobody debates that. Francis Ford Coppola is embarrassed by it, and the whole thing should never have been made. Now they're trying to, under Bush, to create America Part 3, and it's a complete loser, and I'm not even going to bother with it. And I don't think anyone living there, and as Madge instinctively knows, having tasted the brie of France, knows that she's being served cheap imitation crap over there in America. Why bother? She's thinking about emigrating out of America, as so many millions of people are thinking about emigrating out of America. Get out now before it really gets ugly, where the vast, unwashed middle realizes that their houses, you know, have no equity at all. They've been played for chumps, and they've got a lot of anger and a lot of guns. Why get caught up in that mess? And what about propaganda? I see it over there on the screen. What's going on?
Oh, this is from Wikipedia, explaining propaganda is a specific message directly aimed at influencing the opinions or behavior of people rather than impartially providing information. But here are some of the techniques. Flag waving, intentional vagueness, oversimplification, slogans, stereotyping, and unstated assumption, which is a very big thing. The intentional vagueness and unstated assumption is a favored technique, I believe, of Bush.
Mm.
And they also do indoctrination, which is ideological views are established by repetition rather than verification and mass suggestion. So they just keep on repeating something rather than verifying it, like weapons of mass destruction. But you can really see this. You know where you see it this week is this whole stereotyping and indoctrination into this whole war on terror, is the fact that this week, I'm sure many of you might not have heard the news, but there was a thwarted terrorist attack in Brussels. Yep, the center of the European Parliament.
Yeah, this went unreported.
15 people were arrested, just like 15 British-born Muslims a few weeks ago were arrested without plane tickets and without passports, but ready to take down some planes, apparently, and everybody's scared. We're still scared, right? But in Brussels, members of the Belgian military were involved in a scheme to start to blow up the infrastructure in Belgium in order to destabilize the government.
That's right.
I don't see anybody scared, do you?
Well, they're white.
That's well, it falls outside of what the propaganda is trying to make you scared of. Of course, Belgium has no oil to speak of. So why would we want to care about them?
Well, you know, they're white. And what we're saying is that this squeezed middle class, as we just saw in Belgium just a few days ago, the military, which is a middle class, a middle class phenomenon. The military is a middle class job, isn't it?
Yeah.
They are getting their guns and they're going down to the government and they're quite angry.
Well, but, you know, we also speak about these, you know, this 15 British guys who were in their early 20s were an existential threat to us, to the West. This is a genuine existential threat. The military was going to start bombing Brussels.
Well, it's unreported for that reason. Because they're white and, well, they're white, aren't they?
Yeah.
And they're white and therefore they're not as much as a threat. And this is the blind spot. I think we have a huge blind spot because people are preparing themselves for being attacked by blacks. And they're doing everything they can to stop the blacks from attacking in America. And they're stopping the Muslims from attacking in the UK. But they're not really doing much to stop the whites from attacking. They don't see the connection between a Columbine high school killing spree and 9/11, even those two things are directly related. Forget about the conspiracy theory of did the government know about 9/11? Did it foster 9/11? Did it profit from 9/11? Let's talk about the connection between 9/11 and the Columbine high school murders. That's what we should be talking about because there is a connection. And the connection is that there's a growing sense of despair in the middle class and they're willing to take arms against their government. As we saw back in the 18th century, where a growing middle class in America took arms against their British occupiers. You've now got a growing sense of despair in the middle class in America taking arms against their overlords, against a government that has become tyrannical, against a government that is relating itself and talking to them as if they are the feudal lords and the people are the peasants and the serfs. You don't hear a democratic dialogue anymore between Bush and the people. You hear someone who thinks of themselves as a lord, as a king, lording over his population, talking in these vague terms about a war on terror without any attempt to make any solid connections as to what these problems really are. It goes back to a pre-Descartes, pre-enlightened age where you had the king simply saying, talking about, you know, let's build a castle around everybody in my kingdom and I will go out there and protect you from any of the evil threats out there. But you have no rights. We have all of your income. You have no access to education. You're just going to be there consuming and you're just going to be there my private population and just trust me. And this is what, of course, thank God for the Black Plague, because it had it not been for the Black Plague in the mid-millennium back in during the last millennium, wiping out half the world's population, you would never have had the rise of the middle class. You never would have had the rise of wages, and you never would have had the fall of the aristocracy. But now that aristocracy has been put in place, and now you've got, I think, similar Black Plague, if you will, in the internet. You've got the rise of a digital bubonic plague from the point of view of the royalists, of being able to swap freely information that goes outside of the entrenched monopolists. To them, this is the Black Plague. But to the worker, this should be a fantastic opportunity to increase your lot in life, to increase your access to communications, education, knowledge, and art and culture at the expense of the royalists and the monopolists that are trying to block that access. So this is a fantastic opportunity. Everyone should be fighting to the death for access to the internet, broadband access, without unimpeded by monopolists, unimpeded by Microsoft, unimpeded by Hollywood. This is a fight to the death for broadband access. And Madge Weinstein, of course, in Chicago is fully aware of this. She talks about this all the time. Mm-hmm. She's a big advocate of doing away with pernicious copyright laws, doing away with government interference with the internet. And this is the fight that we're talking about, unimpeded access to broadband. And it's a fight to the death. And right now you're seeing the physical manifestations of this with battles and skirmishes that people are losing their lives in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in the World Trade Center, in 7-7, in Columbine. This is just symptomatic of a much bigger picture. The global internet community is arming itself digitally to dethrone the monopolists using P2P file swapping networks, using the internet for what it's there to be used for, which is to allow the collective unconscious and the collective conscious and for culture to evolve organically for the betterment of the entire human population. If that means that a few royalists have to go out of business and a few monopolists have to be disbanded, that's exactly what should happen. And we don't want Bill Gates taking his billions of dollars parading around the world curing malaria. If you put Bill Gates out of business 20 years ago and let the internet and the collective intelligence of the world go to work on these problems would have been fixed 20 years ago. It's because everyone had to join hands and somehow inspire and support a monopolist Bill Gates for 20 years that we have some of these security threats to begin with. We have these security threats to begin with because a monopolist like Coca-Cola is allowed to go into India and totally screw up that country's economy, go into Colombia and screw up that country's economy. What do you think? Who do you think is the root cause of something like a 9/11 now that we're at the 5th-year anniversary? Look at Microsoft. Look at Coca-Cola. These corporations are out there running amok. They've got no government oversight whatsoever. They're actually sticking the knife in people's back in the name of an American taxpayer, and they want people to thank them for that. Well, people are saying, to hell with you, America. You're only 5% of the world's population. There's another 95% of us that don't like what you're doing anymore. We've got the broadband access to create our own culture, our own economies, our own societies. We don't need your so-called democracy, which is just a code word for monopolization, feudalism, despotism, propaganda, nonsense, if I can say that.
You can, obviously.
Now, what about this propaganda?
Well, okay, so everybody is ignoring the story about Brussels, right, where a genuine existential neo-Nazi threat exists. But this week, another announcement came out to break through this intentional vagueness, this unstated assumption. Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran, was ignored by Bush when he challenged him to a public debate, an uncensored public debate, in which they could all put forward their assumptions and then debate them. So Bush ignored him. Now this week, Ahmadinejad has said, I'm actually going to show up on the 19th of September. I'm coming to New York, the first president of Iran to do so in 30 years. I'm going to show up at the UN General Assembly meeting, and I'm going to debate. I'm going to take the debate to you whether or not you want it, because mm-hmm. I know you're using propaganda. You're using this oversimplification, intentional vagueness, and unstated assumption to convince your population that we're the axis of evil. But I'm coming there, and I'm presenting them my own words.
Mm-hmm.
And let the people decide. Let's have a debate.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, of course, not allowed in this pre-Descartes feudalism.
Debating is the enemy of feudalism.
Exactly.
You know, would a king debate another, you know, king? No, they would just
behead them.
You know, they would. It's not a debate, is it? I mean, this is what the whole battle was to establish some kind of theory of society where the individuals have the say in terms of how they are governed, you know. And Bush seems to think that this is not something he's interested in. And you go back to Descartes, you go back to the Protestant Reformation, you go back to Magna Carta, you know, of 1215.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bush is saying, I want to live in a world pre-Magna Carta. I don't want there to be the rule of law. You know, I want to just be able to make rules on the fly, and I want to be able to, you know, wake up any day I want to say that Greg Palast is an enemy combatant and throw him in jail because I don't like what he's talking about today. And maybe that'll change tomorrow, you know. If Greg Palast decides to become my court jester, if he comes down to the White House and parades around in a silly outfit, a harlequin outfit, then I'll let him live. Otherwise, he can't be serious. You know, he's got to, he'll be my little advisor. I don't want him talking to the people because his ideas are a little bit too enlightening. You know. So this is the message they're sending to the media that, listen, if you don't agree with me, if you don't support my propaganda machine, if you don't support my reign of terror, then it's off to the gallows for you. And Americans, unfortunately, at this point, are buying into it. But I'm not surprised because, as we're saying, the America as a country is past its sell-by fresh date, and it was good while it lasted. But there's a big wide world out there. There's a whole human history to get back on track now that we've gone down this dead end called America. America proved to be a dead end. I mean, throughout the history of man's experience on planet Earth, there's been a search for some kind of sustainable government and democratic government and country. America was like leading the race there for a while, but now it's fallen out of the race. It's taken itself out of the race. It's not that America sucks. It's just that they've taken themselves out of the race. They're no longer trying to stand up for democracy anymore. They're trying to compete for last place. They're trying to compete with people who, you know, have very crude weapons and are just banging each other on the head. This is what America wants to compete with now. They don't want to try to go after a higher ideal. They don't want to try to pursue a democratic ideal. They just want to win the stock car race. You know, the America was running in the Formula One races, but they said, no, we don't want to compete in that anymore. We want to be in the stock. We want to be in the what do they call it when the cars crash into each other? The collision derby, the demolition derby.
The bumper cars.
Not even the bumper cars, demolition derby. This is what America wants to compete in. They don't want to be in the first class race anymore.
Uh-huh.
So the first class minds are leaving America, just like the first class minds left Germany, World War II, went to America. This is why Americans' aggregate IQ went up. Now those first class minds are leaving America, and they're saying, "Look, if you want to compete in the demolition derby, we don't want. That's not our. We want to compete when we want to be in the top echelons. We want to compete at the top highest level. Here in America, all you want to do is be the king of the demolition derby. You want to be the king of the scumbags. You know, that's not what we want to do. We want to actually compete on the highest level against the smartest people, against the people who really have a sense of some kind of history, people of sense of philosophy. You know, we don't want to just be out there eating, you know, cheese all day, becoming obese and strong, you know, with our eyeballs glued to the TV screen, thinking about ways to have sex, even though we can't find our genitalia over these 300 pounds of fat. You know, this is what, unfortunately, it's all over. I don't care, though.
300 pounds of fat. That's the Kate Moss model of Americans.
Why would anyone care, really? I mean, it's just sentimentality to think that this country can just go on forever. Its main export, Hollywood, is now facing an insurmountable obstacle, which is P2P free file swapping on the web. Hollywood, thank God, is going to be crushed by this because it's very sentimentally looping the same myth over and over again. Steven Spielberg's movies suck. You know, it's the same sentimentality over and over again. It's America is so saccharine that the P of the average American could glaze a donut. You know, it's just so utterly, it's so utterly bereft of any kind of substantial content at this point. It is the Velveeta cheese. I mean, this is the problem Madge has, is that she's tasted real cheese. Now she's forced to eat processed cheese. And of course, the problem is you're looking for the real cheese, so you keep eating more and more and more and more and more. She's becoming a fat dyke lesbian because she's eating so much cheese, trying to find real cheese. But there is no cheese there. There's no there in the cheese. So it doesn't matter how much you eat. You can eat your weight in cheese. You can wake up and sit down in front of a 200-pound wheel of brie. If it's made in America, there's no cheese there, no matter how much you eat of it. Doesn't matter. So then at the end of the day, you're fatter. Your self-esteem drops, and you think it's your fault. That's the problem Americans have, is that they think it's their fault. They think the obesity is their fault. It's not your fault that you're obese. It's that you have no choice. You have no choice. Everything you have in the supermarket is injected with 12 different kinds of sugar, all kinds of genetically modified crap, all kinds of fat and junk. You have no choice. There's no food on offer. There's nothing that's nourishing there in any sense. And you're going to make that up with what, vitamin supplements and pills that are just make it harder for you to digest food? So you just become a big, fat, obese troglodyte stomping around. You know, in Paris, when I see these American tourists come up the hill here on the Fifth Arrondissement, the hill usually stops 90% of them because they're too fat to make it up the hill to the Pantheon. So they're stuck down there at the Saint Michel near the McDonald's.
Yeah.
This is where they all kind of stuck. They look at the hill and they go, no, I ain't going to walk up the hill. Then they don't have buses up here, too, because there's not much to see other than the Pantheon, and that doesn't really rate in terms of the Eiffel Tower or Sacré-Cœur, and this is where the tourists go.
I think that's intentional, though, because, you know, in the Pantheon, it is the highest honor in France to be buried there, and only the great people of France are buried there, including people like Descartes and Victor Hugo. And I think the French just couldn't possibly deal with having a McDonald's right outside there or Americans traipsing through the Pantheon.
They need a break. I mean, the incredible economy is driven by tourism. It's the most visited country in the world. But they need a place where they need their, you know, they don't want this massive tourist inflow. And this is the area, I think, the most beautiful area of Paris with the least number of tourists.
Don't tell Americans that. But that is true about Paris. If you look around the city, at the bottom of any hill is where you find McDonald's and Starbucks.
That's right.
Because Americans won't walk up the hill.
Yeah, they can't make it up. And the ones that do make it up, you know, I make a point to spit on them.
No, you don't. You're so French. You're becoming so French.
No, I do it in a way that's, first of all, they think I'm French because I'm not obese. So Americans automatically, they say, bonjour. And I say, uh-huh. Oh, bonjour. They're like, we're American. I go, oh, that's great. Nice to see you. And they go, wow, you speak English really well. Where'd you learn to speak English?
Exactly.
I'm like, at school. I'm French, of course, as you can tell. But I learned to speak English in the Sorbonne. That's amazing. We think that your English sounds really good. Where's the McDonald's? We're having a come. We're crashing. We need to have a Big Mac before we go into insulin shock. I'm like, well, just go back down the hill, you fat, lard-ass motherfucker. That's typically what I say. Then they go, wow, that's so cool. That's like street credibility, man. Do you listen to P. Diddy? I'm like, yeah, dude. Keep walking.
But it is true. It is true that we speak like this. Max and I will speak as we are speaking now. Every American will always, every single time, they say, wow, you speak perfect English.
because we're not obese, they assume that we're European, which is amazing. So let's look at some of the corporate crookery going on. This is a story. We had one story. Oh, excuse me. All that talk of American.
Oh, my God.
Has given me the burpees.
Oh, my God.
You know, the...
You sound like Madge.
Oh, yeah.
Madge burps, too.
She does, yeah. Not so much lately, though.
No.
I noticed, because she's... I don't know what's going on there. But anyway, the thing is this. You know, we're talking about backdating of options. That's one scam that we're keeping tabs on. The backdating of options scam is pretty ugly because after 9/11, the stock market crashed a bit and the stock prices went down a lot. And then a few years later, the stock prices recovered. You know, America didn't spend any money protecting the people down there in the lower Manhattan, for example. They all have respiratory diseases now. They're dying like dropping like flies because they didn't want to spend any money protecting those people. But they wanted to get the markets back open again.
Yep.
And after a few years, the stock prices are now back up. You know, the Dow Jones is at 11,300 or something like this. So what these crooked bankers have done is that they've said that, well, wouldn't it have been great if we had bought stock back 5 years ago when the prices were low? And what they've done is the CEOs of many companies in America awarded themselves stock options based on prices from 5 years ago. And since the prices have moved up a lot in 5 years, it means that these options are instantly in the money. They're instantly profitable. It's just you're creating money out of thin air. You're stealing, in other words. And so you've got this backdating of options scandal, which is now growing. It went from a few companies are being investigated to a few hundred, and they have over 2,000 companies to look through. They think that there's quite an epidemic of this type of fraud. You know, it seems every month there's a new fraud of the month, of course. But here's another one coming, which this is one that will be in the news more and more in the coming weeks, which is that there's a comeback of what are called blank check stock issues.
Mm-hmm. What's
and,
that?
Well, a blank check stock issue is that a company, this is interesting, it says, this year blank check companies have sold $2.2 billion worth of stock in 28 offerings, and there are 4.3 billion more in new issues planned with the help of Wall Street's best known banks, including Citigroup, Merrill Lynch. Now, what this means, what a blank check offering is that the bank, like a Merrill Lynch or a Citigroup, they will sell shares to their customers in a company that doesn't exist. So let's say we've got a company here that it doesn't exist. We want you to buy shares in it and give us $1 billion. And then when you give us your $1 billion, we're going to create the company.
Huh. How can they do that? Who gives them the money?
Well, in the case of someone like a Merrill Lynch, you know, Merrill Lynch has something like 15,000 or 20,000 retail stockbrokers.
Uh-huh.
And these people are plugged into households all over America. And people have their portfolios at Merrill Lynch. And they have stocks and bonds and mortgages. And so the broker calls up the customer and just says, you know, there's a famous person here who's made money in the past who wants you to give him your money. And when you do, he's going to figure out what to do with it. And the customer will say, geez, I don't know. It sounds crazy to me. And you'll say, well, yeah, but, you know, it's a good deal. And then the retail customer will say, okay, you know, give me $10,000 worth of this blank check offering as a flyer. You know, they'll take a risk. But you multiply that times 20,000 retail stockbrokers, and pretty soon you've got a big offering. Now, what happened in the 1920s, before the crash of the 1920s, was that Morgan Stanley was underwriting blank check offerings, and they were using the money to invest in other blank check offerings. So it became this huge Ponzi scheme, which led to the crash of 29, is that they were found, you know, all these banks were investing in each other's deals. Similar to what happened in Japan before the, you know, the Japanese market with the, what they call them, the, oh my God, what do they call them? The Karuatsu or something.
Yeah.
They were all investing in each other, which kept the Nikkei at 40,000 yen.
Mm-hmm.
And then they introduced a futures product, which allowed people to make bets against the market, and it dropped to like 12,000 yen. So here, this is very symptomatic. It's very recurrent in the history of economics, is that usually at tops, market tops, you have this type of flagrant criminal behavior of doing things like floating blank check companies, where they say, give us the money first, then we'll figure out what to do with the money.
Max, we only have 2 minutes, but I want to say that that kind of sounds like what has happened in the UK over the last month or two in the online betting floats. Because basically, they weren't real companies. Because as they say in their prospectuses, 95% of their income came from America, where it is illegal and against the law to do online gambling.
Yeah.
So as we see now, all the CEOs of these companies, from David Carruthers 2 months ago from Bet on Sport to the sportingbet.co.uk chair this week, was arrested in America. So this seems almost like that. Can you relate those two together? Is that true?
Well, it's a stepping stone. It's a stepping stone to a blank check company. First, if you can get people to buy stock in a company where 95% of their business is in a country that considers that business illegal,
uh-huh,
then the next step is to get people to buy into a company where 100% of the activities don't exist yet.
Okay.
So it's a stepping stone.
Yeah.
It doesn't come out of a vacuum. It's a stepping stone. You know, and to wrap it up and bring it back to the 9/11, you know, the events of 9/11, if you listen to people in America, they would have you believe that it happened from it happened suddenly. There was no kind of lead up to it. It came from people who were evil, that were not even human. And we had no idea it was coming. We have no idea why they did it, other than they're evil and we're pure. And for that reason, we're throwing our country under the bus. And I would tell you that the 9/11 events happened over time, step by step, gradually.
Mm.
There are people who profited from it every single step of the way, including people inside America. The events were predictable. The next events similar to this are predictable now, and it didn't happen in a vacuum. It was a very calculated bet made by the same people who bring you the blank check stock issues and selling stock in gambling companies where 95% of the business is illegal in the countries that they're trying to do business in. It's not a mystery. The news is there, if you look at the financial news, to understand what the political news will be in 2 or 3 weeks' time, because our political news is driven now entirely by insider trading and market manipulation.
Okay, we're Max and Stacey. We're The Truth About Markets. This is Resonance 104.4 FM. And you can email us, and we'll read your emails out next week at karmabank@gmail.com, or leave an audio message at 0207-193-5755. See you.